Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile.
With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
It's a brand new year, and what better time to get going with that online store you've been thinking of? Those "I was there when Arsenal actually scored a goal" t-shirts would fly off the shelves right now. And to get yourself up and running, you need Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage, all the way through to the did we hit a million orders stage, Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, up to 36% better compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort with thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 a month trial period at shopify.com/arsblog, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/arsblog now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/arsblog. Hello and welcome to another Arsblog Arscast right here on arsblog.com. How are you? Hope you're well. I'm just about hanging on here. The game, the Europa League win over Red Star Belgrade, is just finished, and whew, blimey, what can you say? I'm not sure I have the words to describe what I've just seen this evening. Breathtaking, electrifying, gripping, scintillating, exciting, thrilling, stimulating, overwhelming, magnificent, mind-bending, rip-roaring, wondrous, hair-raising. None of those words could really be used to describe the 1-0 win over Red Star Belgrade in the Europa League, making it 3 out of 3 for Arsenal, 100% record in this tournament this season. And you know, okay, I'm going to hold my hands up here. I think it's my fault. I talked this week about how much fun the Europa League was, how different it was, how there was a freshness to it. But you know what the problem was? The problem was that this felt like a Champions League game. That's what I'm putting it down to. Nothing to do with the team selection, nothing to do with the paucity of performance, nothing to do with us not really knowing what kind of football we're supposed to be playing these days. It just felt like a Champions League game. One of those games where you go away from home. We've seen them countless times in the past. Sometimes we win, sometimes we don't. We might get a draw. You know, there was a game a few years ago where we were like 1-0 down. It could have been against... oh, crap. I can't remember who it was against. How am I supposed to remember these things at this time of night? But it was, again, I think, a German side, and we were losing 1-0 until the last 2 minutes. And I think Kieran Gibbs and Lukas Podolski scored goals in the final 2 minutes to give us a 2-1 win. It was like, oh, well, okay, we've won. I can't be unhappy that we've won. That's ridiculous. We've won, and we've pulled a game from the ashes, and we've beaten whoever it was we played and taken 3 points, and there was an element of that with last night's game. It was just like, oh, please, just get it over with. Can we have the 90 minutes? Oh, please, just over. And then we score this amazing goal, a truly fantastic goal, the move between Wilshire and Walcott, and then Giroud's finish. Not quite a Wilshire against Norwich, not quite one of those tippy-tappy great goals that we've scored in the past, but still a very, very good goal, and a goal that stood out in terms of quality because it was so much higher than what we saw for the rest of the game. Arsenal didn't really perform. We had lots of possession. We didn't create an awful lot with it. There wasn't much pace to our attacking play. There wasn't much movement. There wasn't much guile. Whatever was going to come was always going to come from Jack Wilshere, I think. Giroud was up there. Walcott was buzzing around him. But, you know, it was about as effective as a mosquito doing laps of an Easter Island statue. I don't know how to describe it. It just wasn't great. You know, there wasn't much going on either behind them. Reece Nelson, Ainsley Maitland-Niles, two guys at wing back, and they've an important role to play in this formation, but they're two guys played out of position. They're not really doing it. I like the look of Joe Willock, I have to say. There was something tidy and accomplished about his performance in midfield, if not particularly eye-catching. And Jack Wilshere looked to be the guy who was going to make the difference, and he had a big part in the goal, of course. At the back, there wasn't a lot going on, thankfully. There wasn't a lot to take care of. Elneny at centre-half. No, thank you, no. No, let's not do that, please. I understand why it had to happen tonight, but, you know, we shouldn't do that, because he doesn't really know the position particularly well. About a minute into the game, I'm looking at our defensive anchorman, the man who's supposed to, you know, sit there and let the other two centre-halves do the business, and he's near the halfway line chasing a player around. You're going, uh-oh. If they're any good, we could be in trouble here. Thankfully, they're not, and we weren't. Matthew Debussy did 90 minutes. Good for him. 90 minutes for Matthew Debussy for the first time since November 2015, when he played in a 5-1 defeat to Bayern Munich. Sorry to bring that up again, but there you go. And Rob Holding, I thought, was okay. Petr Cech did pretty well, but, you know, look, in games like this where we've got a Premier League trip to Everton on Sunday, we've got a Carabao Cup game on Tuesday, all of that informs the team selection. There is no point in playing the big guns in these games, but you've got to ask, can we get more out of these players? Can we get more out of a group of players who maybe aren't the best players we've got, but is there a way of putting them out there that could make them more effective? Do we have to play three at the back, for example? Could we not get an extra man in midfield? Could we not play Nelson in one of the attacking positions? You know, things like that could make a difference. And team selection is a bit of an issue, but we might touch on that more in a couple of moments' time when we talk to our guest. A bit later on, we're going to get an Everton perspective on what's going on at their club and what they think might happen this Sunday when we go to Goodison Park. But right now, to discuss the Europa League and all the rest, I'm joined by Tim Stillman. Hi, Tim.
Hello there.
How's the heart? Still racing, I guess.
Yeah, I'm still having palpitations over here, struggling to get my breath back after that riveting display.
Oh, look, I know that we can take the piss out of that and everything else, but I guess there is a reason for the display and the performance and everything else, and we can put it down to Europa. People might say, oh, well, this is the Europa League. I don't think that's what it is.
No.
Well, what we've got is a team selection that's absolutely informed by the fact that we have to keep players fresh for Sunday because we go to Goodison Park to play Everton. And as well as that, there's a game on Tuesday in the Carabao Cup against Norwich. And on top of that, we've got players being played out of position. We've got players who perhaps need better players around them to make them look good. And it just all sort of came together in a big cauldron of meh, I guess you would say.
Yeah. I mean, obviously, it's a very disjointed lineup, and so you get a kind of disjointed performance. But ultimately, as eye-bleeding as a game like that was, we're on 9 points out of nine, and we're top of the group. We're probably we've got two home games to spare, so we're almost certainly going to top the group and not trouble any of our big players. Which, to me, that's worth kind of sitting through a game like that. And even the Borisov game, which was a little bit more the other end of the scale, a bit bonkers. But it was a bit of a weird old game. It was a bit like a friendly, really. And I'm quite happy to sit through games like that if it means we're managing our squad and our resources particularly well. And in a sense, I feel sorry for some of the younger players because, you know, the likes of Reece Nelson and Maitland-Niles, they're not going to be able to show their best in games like this. But ultimately, that's not really why Arsene Wenger's playing them. He's not really playing them to develop them. That's kind of a bonus. It's more, this is just the second string, and this is just a way of getting through without playing our big players. So, it's not really about their development so much, although it will help at least a bit, I suppose.
Yeah, I mean, look, you know, people talk, and you see people talking all the time about, well, Europa League, it's a load of shit, what's the point of the Europa League? And then we see a team selection like that, and people seem to go mental about the team selection, which surprises me. And it was more or less the team that I thought we would put out. I don't know why anybody was in any way surprised by it. I'm sorry. I'm just sitting here watching Everton playing Lyon. I've got a stream of it here. And Lyon have just gone ahead 2-1. Ooh. What a lovely goal that was. Koeman is looking so sad. Oh, look at him. Don't worry, Ronald. We'll make you feel better on Sunday. But what I've lost my train of thought here. Yeah, no, just about the actual team selection and people's reaction to it. I mean, what do they want? I mean, there was part of me that was going, you know what's going to happen here is that Petr Cech is going to take a goal kick and he's going to like just go, my thigh or my, and people will go, well, why the fuck did you play Petr Cech in a game doesn't mean anything? And now we've got no goalkeeper for Sunday and all that kind of stuff. So, you know, this is what the Europa League is at this point in the group stages. These are the players we're going to see and kind of these are the performances that we're going to get because of that.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. And like you say, you know, we don't really want to risk players, you know, risk our big players, and people would go mad over that. It's quite weird because I was kind of this is the first game I've not actually been to in a couple of years, so like I actually did glance a couple of times at my timeline, and I just thought to myself, is this what Twitter's always like? Did I just like, you know, am I just not used to this, or is this like an unreasonable level of scrutiny for a game like this? But I mean, ultimately, you're right. That is the team we're going to see. And to be fair, we can afford one bad result in this. And I think, you know, Arsene is playing the percentages a bit. He probably realised this is the hardest game. If the Rick had happened tonight, there'd have been plenty of time to recover it. Two more home games. It didn't happen. So really, like, it wouldn't have been a disaster to lose it, really. It would have made everyone feel quite bad. But I still think we'd have topped the group with a defeat tonight. But with a win, I think, you know, we're 90, in terms of qualification, we're 95% of the way there.
Yeah.
In terms of topping the group, we're a good 80 to 90% of the way there, I think. So, you know, it's just management of resources. And I think, you know, some of those players as well, the likes of Jack Wilshere, these games, I think, very, very valuable for him. Even, you know, someone like Olivier Giroud, just to keep his hand in a bit, because we're not going to play, I would hope, Ainsley Maitland-Niles at left wing back in a big Premier League game. That shouldn't happen. But we're probably going to have to call on Walcott, Giroud, Wilshere. And I think those are the players, really, that these games are more useful for, to kind of keep their hand in, keep them involved, and keep them sharp.
Yeah, I mean, I'd rather see Olivier Giroud plot around the pitch like he did tonight for 90 minutes and score an amazing goal, in fairness to him. I mean, hats off, we know he's got that in his locker, but, you know, overall, it was one of those games where you're going, oh, this is not a game that suits Olivier Giroud. He just can't make any impact on it because of the way that we're playing. But I'd rather see him play in these games than come on at Watford, for example, the way he did in place of Lacazette. And that's not to criticise Giroud, of course. No. You know, he doesn't put himself on. It's the manager's decision to put him on. I think, you know, when we look at the way that the team is playing, the way the team is set up, you know, a game like tonight is exactly what he needs, because he could be fresh for when we actually need him, rather than putting him on because the manager thinks he's got to give him some time.
Yeah, absolutely. And a couple of things I tweeted before the game. So in Borisov, I thought the partnership between him and Wilshere looked really interesting. And actually, I really like Wilshere in this kind of advanced position, particularly because I'm just not quite sure he has the athleticism for central midfield for 90 minutes in the Premier League anymore. He might get that back, but at the moment, I just don't think he has it. So playing him in this kind of slightly higher up position, I think, does suit him, particularly because we kind of play two number 10, so it's not all on him, and he can just concentrate on what he's good at. And actually, him and Giroud, and, you know, we saw that in the Norwich goal, for example, 4 years ago. Him and Giroud, they kind of have similar ideas about how they want to play around the box. They like that one touch layoff, you know, tippy tappy on the left foot kind of stuff, and they kind of suit each other. And I was really looking forward to seeing that tonight. And actually, for about 80 minutes, I was thinking, Yeah, we've not actually really seen that. Because I think on paper, Wilshere, Walcott and Giroud is actually quite a nice balance in a front three. And then I was thinking, we've not really seen that tonight. But then, you know, in the goal, they all combined. I don't know if I want to say brilliantly. It's such a strange goal. There was such a kind of seam of, not quite accidental, but it just felt like everybody was reacting on instinct. That it was very improvised.
Yeah.
So I was kind of looking forward to that front three, was a bit underwhelmed by them, but, you know, all three of them had a big part to play in the goal.
Yeah, I mean, it felt like it was so at odds with the rest of the game, wasn't it? That it was this piece of brilliant football when there wasn't an awful lot of that to enjoy throughout the game. You know, it was very functional sort of football. But I don't know what you can expect. You know, you've got Nelson playing out of position, Elneny playing out of position, you've got Maitland-Niles playing out of position. I have to say I like the look of Joe Willock. There's something not terribly eye-catching about him, but what he does, he seems to do it really well. I think he ended up with 95% pass completion. He doesn't look at all phased by what's going on. You know, this is a team from a tough league, grown men playing against him. He wants the ball all the time. I think he faded a little bit, but he interests me a bit more than the other two. You know, Maitland-Niles, you can see he's got a lot of pace. Nelson, there's creativity. He can produce things in the final third. But, you know, we've seen players like that before. But it feels like it's a while since Arsenal have really produced a central midfielder who could actually make the grade. It's still very early days, I know. And, you know, we could be projecting here. But I think there's something quite interesting about Willock and the fact that the manager is willing to give him games in that position.
Yeah, I think so. And quite often with a younger player, sometimes it's not always down to, well, obviously it is down to how good they are. But sometimes it usually comes down to opportunity, and what type of player you are and what your team is missing can govern that opportunity. So, for example, Hector Bellerin got his opportunity because our right backs got injured at the same time. Alex Iwobi got his opportunity because what we really missed kind of when Tomas Rosicki came out of the team was someone to just do that quick zippy movement passing kind of thing. And it wasn't that Iwobi, you know, I saw him a little bit at kind of youth level and, you know, he looked quite good, but he wasn't a guy you'd pick out and go, yeah, he's definitely going to be a first team player. You thought, yeah, he's got a chance. But the reason he got his opportunity is because we were really missing a player that has his qualities. And that's where someone like Willock really could, you know, have a bit of a chance. Because if you look at this Arsenal team at the moment and you look at what it's missing, really, I think your number one kind of the thing that sticks out first is a fairly calm on the ball presence in central midfield, which we haven't had since kind of Arteta and Cazorla, really. That's a real hole at the moment. And so actually, you're right, Willock, quite understated, but actually Arsenal have, you could argue, have a real need for an understated central midfielder who just passes the ball at 95%. And it could be very interesting. I think you're right, because he could have made other choices tonight. He could have gone with another centre-back and moved Elneny in there. He could have brought Wilshere back and perhaps, I don't know, played Alex Iwobi, for example. But to play him in Belgrade in front of 55,000 pretty hostile fans, you know, that was interesting. Because, like I said, I was in Belarus for the Borisov game, and honestly, it was like I imagine those friendlies are like in the Far East. It was like the home end was full of Arsenal shirts. Everyone was really happy to see Arsenal. It was quite an open game that lacked intensity. This was the opposite. This was, you know, quite hostile, very partisan crowd, although I'm sure they won't forgive me for referring to them as partisan. But, you know, hostile atmosphere. And, yeah, for him to get on the ball and complete at 95% in that kind of environment, not a fabulous pitch either. I think that was a very interesting performance too. Yeah.
I mean, I think there was something interesting about the fact that he picked him there in preseason too. He picked him away in Australia and in China. And Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain was still at the club at that point. Now maybe Wenger knew that he was going and didn't want to, you know, give him those games in central midfield. But I think it said a lot that he would play that guy there in central midfield rather than Oxlade-Chamberlain. I mean, one guy, just going back to Jack Wilshere. the legs obviously still need a bit of development coming back from his injury, you know, but I think there are promising signs from Jack in terms of what he can do and what he can bring. And if we're looking for a little bit more craft in central midfield, and this is one of the things that frustrated me about last weekend's game against Watford, you know, after they'd scored, I was looking, okay, come on, let's get Wilshere on the pitch here. We had opportunity to get him on the pitch for the last 15, 20 minutes, and it was only 3 or 4 minutes when Arsene Wenger was going to bring him on, then didn't because of the injury to Koscielny. But I think he's pushing now. He may not be the guy for 90 minutes, but he's certainly a guy who's pushing the manager into thinking that he is someone who can contribute at Premier League level now and not just at Europa League or in the Carabao Cup.
Definitely, at the very least from the bench at the moment. And I think he'll be on the bench on Sunday. And, you know, he might feature. The manager might hold him back perhaps for the Carabao Cup game. But I think, again, the really interesting thing that Jack brings, if you look at, you know, our real de facto central midfield is Xhaka and Ramsey. Xhaka can ping the ball long distances. Ramsey does most of his work off the ball. What we're really missing, particularly since, you know, we lost players like Rosicki, Cazorla, and now Chamberlain as well, we don't have many ball carriers. We don't have many players that can beat someone, that can commit defences, and that can just move the ball some other way, other than just, you know, launching diagonal balls or long balls to Giroud or just waiting for Alexis to do something with it.
Yeah.
And I think Jack potentially brings us something very, very interesting there that we miss. Like I say, I'm not convinced that central midfield is for him at the moment. But back when we used to play 4-2-3-1, I always liked him coming off the right. In fact, I'm sure I wrote about this, like, I don't know, 4 years ago or something, that I thought that kind of right wing position coming in and joining in with the centre midfield from the right, particularly because of how left footed he is, that's actually a position I quite like for him.
Yeah.
And it's kind of the same if we play this kind of two behind the front man, he can kind of do that. He can kind of drift into those pockets of space. And yeah, I think he's really pushing his case at the moment in quite a big way.
Isn't there another way of getting him in the team, which is to move to a back four and play three in midfield, to have that extra man in the centre of midfield, which is and has been for two seasons now at least our real fundamental weakness, is the fact that this area of the pitch just doesn't work for us. We can't find the right combination of players whether it's because of injury, whether it's because of suspension, whether it's because the players that we have don't fit together, that the issues that we have in there, seems to me, could easily, not easily, but perhaps be solved by putting an extra body in there. So you've got a three-man central midfield, you've got that extra body, one who could sit deep if you need to add that bit of defensive security, and Wilshere strikes me as a player who could work in tandem quite well with Xhaka, with Ramsey, perhaps with Coquelin, with Elneny. He sort of fits in there with all of them, and that might be a way of getting him back into the side.
Yeah, definitely. And one of the things I wrote about this week, that Wenger's kind of away from home, he's got a bit of this conundrum where he doesn't really want to play Ozil because Ozil doesn't contribute off the ball enough. But when he doesn't play him, we don't have enough craft and we don't have enough creativity. And potentially Jack Wilshere is kind of a happy medium there, because he's not as creative as Mesut Ozil, but he's more creative than Mohamed Elneny, for example. And he's not amazing off the ball, but he's better than Mesut Ozil is. So particularly away from home, I think there's real potential for that. There's, you know, this kind of, that almost kind of, not quite solves that conundrum, but it could be a very interesting solution to it, to give Jack maybe a bit of freedom and have, you know, a fairly solid platform. And yeah, play him almost like a number 10, just in front of, you know, either Xhaka and Ramsey or whoever. I still don't think it's brilliant off the ball, because I still don't think Jack Wilshere's brilliant in that sense. He tries, but I don't think he's got amazing off-ball intelligence.
But is that not like a sort of an upgrade on let's say what we get from Mesut Ozil in a big game away from home? That there is a bit more bite to Wilshere. You know, I think he is a bit more inclined to get stuck in, and he's talked, I think, in the past about how when he was playing for England, perhaps under Roy Hodgson, that he enjoyed this sort of deep-lying midfield role, which I don't think really suits him particularly well, but it's a part of the game that he seems to enjoy. He does like a bit of a tackle at times, Jack, and he won't back down. He's not a guy who will turn his back on something. You know, he'll go face first and, you know, end up out of the game for 6 months, but that's just the way he is.
Yeah, I mean, that, you know, in the build up to that second goal, for example, like, we got the real yin and yang of Ozil when he came on. He, you know, created an opportunity instantly, the likes of which we hadn't been able to create before. But then for the winning goal, you know, he's not even shoved off the ball. He removes himself from the ball, and you can't really see Wilshere doing that. So I think you're right. Like, where Wilshere's not, you know, the most amazing off the ball kind of player, he at least kind of tries, for want of a better word. And that's in lieu of a better option in what we've actually got at the moment, that's probably preferable.
What do you see him doing this weekend for the game against Everton on the basis of what we saw last weekend at Vicarage Road, where Arsenal should have won that game? There's no question in my mind we should have won that game. We had the chances to win the game, even if the penalty had a big impact on the game in the sense that it gave Watford some momentum. I think we have to look at our own performance above all else, and certainly the last 20 minutes we did not threaten them at all. We invited pressure on ourselves, and there were players culpable for that to varying degrees. I mean, is he going to look at the team that went out at Watford and say, look, you did not do what you were supposed to do in that game. Sit your arses down on the bench for a week or two, or you're going to have to play yourself back into the team? Or does he just not have the ability or the options to change things at this moment in time?
I think more the latter. And I think kind of one of the interesting things about having a Europa League game immediately before a Premier League game, it gives you a very good idea of what the starting lineup's going to be for the Premier League game, because basically whoever doesn't play is going to play. So I think you'll see Xhaka back in, you'll see Ramsey back in. You know, by all reports, Alexis should be available and he'll definitely play. And Lacazette will definitely play. The interesting one for me is whether he play, and we don't really know, I don't think, what the case is with Danny Welbeck yet, but I think he'd be pretty foolish to start him anyway.
I think he's out. I think it was a hamstring, and I think he's probably going to be out. So, I mean, it's going to be I think it's a straight choice, isn't it, between Ozil and Iwobi for that right-hand side. And, you know, if it were me, I have to say, you know, I've got this hankering to see Alexis, Ozil and Lacazette. But I do wonder, you know, I'm looking at Everton here. They're like 2 minutes away from being beaten 2-1 in the Europa League by Lyon. The pressure that Koeman is under, the pressure that's going to come from the fans. You know, good save from Pickford. But, you know, it maybe is a case that given the state that they're in, we might be better off like going for it in an attacking sense as much as we possibly can. So that might mean Ozil, Lacazette and Alexis, even if that's not the ideal scenario away from home. You know, they're so brittle, I think, that we could take advantage of that.
Yeah, definitely, particularly in the first kind of 20 minutes or so. I don't know what sort of team Everton have put out tonight, but you know, potentially we've got a physical advantage over them as well, because we left, you know, nearly all the players that are going to start on Sunday at home, and we kicked off earlier anyway. I know there's the travelling.
But I
would certainly do that. And I think we really need to see Lacazette avail of Ozil. I almost feel a bit sorry for him, because he was probably sold this kind of, yeah, we're going to play you in front of Mesut Ozil. And he was probably thinking, oh, lovely.
Yeah.
And, it hasn't really happened yet. And it you know, potentially, I understand why Wenger's reticent about putting the three of them together, but I agree with you. I think for a game like that, I think for Man City, you don't do that, for example.
No.
But for this game, I think the first 20 minutes or so, you've got to think Everton are going to be quite nervous. The crowd might be quite nervous. If we can impose the game on them straight away, I think that'd be very interesting. I do have a feeling he's going to start Iwobi, though, just because I think Iwobi would have gone tonight unless he was, you know, unless he was planning on starting him. I think Iwobi would have gone in some capacity, particularly when you look at our bench tonight. There wasn't much to bring on, particularly in an attacking sense. It was, we were going to have to win it with those 11 players. And I appreciate Iwobi played on Saturday and, you know, looked quite tired towards the end, but I do think he will start Alex Iwobi. Otherwise, I think he might have travelled to Belgrade. But I'm with you for this game. I think you've got to look at the scenario and say, right, we could do with the confidence ourselves anyway. And, you know, this is as good a time to go to Goodison Park as we're ever going to have, really. Yeah. So I think that first 20 minutes, we get on top of them and go for them. And if we end up playing, you know, a bit high up the pitch, one thing Everton really lack is pace. So, you know, we're perhaps not as susceptible to them as we might otherwise usually be.
Yeah, they've just lost 2-1. Koeman is looking very rueful here on the sideline.
Good.
Could he, you know, we could face that terrible scenario, couldn't we, of the manager getting sacked and you end up with a caretaker who does the business. But, you know, it would be, I'd be surprised if it happened before Sunday. Yeah, I mean, I would be inclined to go for it as well. I mean, I think there is perhaps a feeling that Ozil doesn't do it ever away from home, and that, I don't think that's the case. You know, he has done it away from home, maybe not against the likes of Liverpool or Man United, Chelsea, Man City. Koeman's on the pitch now. He's giving out to the officials about something. I'm not quite sure what. That's a sure sign he's absolutely fucked, actually. He's on the pitch, and the referee's just going, fuck off. Now, just get lost. But, you know, I've forgotten what I was talking about there. I was talking about Ozil doing it. I mean, he can do it. I don't think Everton this season are even the Everton of last season.
No, absolutely not. And you have to think, I mean, like I say, if we start this game well, we can almost play it like a home game where we look to impose ourselves from the off. And if we can get, obviously it's a gamble, but I think it's one worth taking. We kind of saw at Watford, you know, and Watford are playing much, much better than Everton are at the moment. We all know that Everton are, you know, perhaps a bigger club with maybe even better players than Watford, but Watford are a much better team at this moment in time. And we kind of went there, I wouldn't say cautious, but yeah, maybe a bit cautious with the kind of front three that we chose. And we kind of went for muscle really over creativity. And I think we kind of misjudged Watford by doing that. I think we kind of went on the stereotype of what we think Watford is rather than what they actually are at the moment. And you know, I don't want us to kind of make that error with Everton and think, oh, this is Everton away and Everton are good. I think we should look more at the table and say, well, actually, at this moment in time, Everton are not good. Let's really capitalise on that. Let's establish ourselves. And you know, if we can get that bit of space as well, and if we're dominating the ball, then Ozil is absolutely a player you want. If you've got more of the ball than the opposition, then, you know, I think he's not been brilliant of late, but at the same time, I do think that we have short memories about what a fantastic player he is. He's still looking for that spark a little bit, but also he's been very in and out of the side. And I don't know, maybe now's the time to say, right, let's get him in the side. Let's get him behind Lacazette. Let's get Lacazette his first away goal, because I don't doubt that that's weighing on him a little bit at the moment. And you know, let's try and get some confidence back into the team. And Ozil is definitely a player who can help us do that.
All right. Well, look, fingers crossed that we can give Ronald Koeman the send off that he deserves after all the annoying times that he's managed the team to beat us or to results that we didn't like.
I despise him. I'd consider it a trophy if we if we were the ones that got him the sack. I would enjoy that.
Yeah, we could put that in Arsene's trophy cabinet. Yeah, I'd enjoy that too, I have to say. All right, Tim, listen, thanks a million, and we'll catch up soon.
Pleasure.
Thank you very much indeed to Tim. You know where to find him. He is on Twitter @Stilberto. You can read his column every week on arsblog.com. It's sometimes on a Thursday, and because of the EuroLeague, it is sometimes on a Wednesday. Never let it be said that we don't give you variety on top of top quality content right here on arsblog.com. Just want to remind you, if you are down under, that I'm going to be there next week. It's a long way to go, blimey, I have to say. But I'm going to be at the Sports Writers Festival in Melbourne and in Sydney. I'm in Melbourne on October 28th, and the event in Sydney is on November the 4th. It's going to be an interview about Arsblog, but also about new media and how the whole media landscape is changing in terms of blogs, in terms of podcasts, in terms of being a niche publisher, writing about your favorite football team and how you could make it happen, all those kind of things. All the details are on the website, which is sportswritersfestival.com.au. That is sportswritersfestival.com.au. And I know that there are games on while I'm down there. There's a couple of games when I'm in Melbourne, a couple of games when I'm in Sydney. So hopefully we can catch up with some of the Australian Gooners down there and watch a game. I think they're on at crazy times of the night, though. I think the Swansea game on the 28th is on at 1 o'clock in the morning over there. But you know, I could be tempted to stay up a bit late, drink a beer or two, and watch some games with fellow fans. So hopefully we can make that happen as well. So check it out. It is the Sports Writers Festival, and the website is sportswritersfestival.com.au.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact. You can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
It's a brand new year, and what better time to get going with that online store you've been thinking of? Those "I was there when Arsenal actually scored a goal" t-shirts would fly off the shelves right now. And to get yourself up and running, you need Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way through to the did we hit a million orders stage, Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, up to 36% better compared to other leading commerce platforms, and sell more with less effort with thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 a month trial period at shopify.com/arsblog, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/arsblog now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/arsblog. Right, ahead of Sunday's game against Everton at Goodison Park, it's time to get a perspective from that side of the fence. Earlier on Thursday, I spoke to one of my ESPN FC colleagues, Luke O'Farrell. He is their Everton correspondent, and we spoke about what's going on at their club at the moment, about Ronald Koeman, about the way their season is going at the moment, and the upcoming game against Arsenal. So check it out. This is me chatting to Luke O'Farrell.
Let me ask you first, how were Everton fans feeling at the end of last season? You finished seventh, but like a good way ahead of the eighth position. I think there was like a 15-point gap, still a little bit behind the top six, but there was kind of a, I guess, a feeling of optimism having finished the way that you did.
Yeah, I think we ended up something like 15 points off fourth and 15 points off eighth. So we were sort of in a league of our own. That gave some indication as to the job we had to do ahead of the summer. But I think the way it's gone, the summer started to lose its way a bit. We got Pickford in and Keane in, and everybody knew we needed a goalkeeper and a centre-back, and they've been great for the most part. But around the time we started going after Rooney, and the Sigurdsson move went on for too long, I think it was about 6 weeks, and we just sort of lost our way. Everyone could see whether Lukaku stayed or not, and everybody knew he was going. We needed pace and width, and he didn't do anything about that.
I mean, was there a feeling, given that Everton's spending over the last... Well, for as long as I can remember, certainly in Premier League era, it's been relatively frugal. You know, they haven't splashed out in a big way, but obviously with the money that's swanning around or swishing around the Premier League at this moment in time, everybody's a bit cash rich. And I think we saw that with the spending, that, for example, £40 million on Gylfi Sigurdsson, good player as he is. You know, that's the kind of money that Arsenal spent on Mesut Ozil just a few years ago. But what was the feeling after the summer was done, the spending had been completed, there had been that big investment in the squad. Were there still many doubts, or was there a feeling that, okay, we've brought some players in here and we're really going to have a go?
I think, as bad as it sounds, I think we spent in the region of 140 million, and that was almost like, well, that's going to keep us where we were, and this is going to take time. We'll have to build, because as much as it misses the bigger picture, I think we've got far more problems than that. Not replacing Lukaku, we were always going to struggle with that. Because it's not so much the results at the minute as well, it's the performances that are, you're not seeing anything really. You know, we've played Tottenham, United, and we've basically just rolled over.
So there's no, there's no sense that the team is... it's a terrible thing to say, or a difficult thing to say, or to quantify, but up for it. You know, that there isn't a feeling that this team is ready to dig in.
No. We've conceded the first goal, I think, in 9 of the last 10 games. And the one thing you can guarantee is, and as much as Moyes had his faults, his teams generally, you could rely on them to dig in. And we had a similar situation a few years ago. And I think we conceded the first goal in the first 6 games, and we lost none of them. And that's not, obviously, it's not a good, you don't want to be conceding first every week, but that team could scrap, and you just get the sense that this team can't.
What were people thinking of Ronald Koeman at the start of the season, before anything had kicked off, after the end of last season and the good finish that got you into seventh, even if you were in a league of your own? Were people favourably disposed to Koeman? Was there a sense that he was the guy who was the right man to take the club forward?
I think mostly, yeah. He just marked such a significant shift from Martinez. Martinez praised everything, and, you know, you'd lose 3-0 and Martinez would come out and say, oh, that wasn't so bad. And you're like, we've just lost 3-0, you know. Whereas Koeman came in, he was quite abrupt, honest. If we played badly, he said, you know, that wasn't good enough. And everyone sort of went, well, that's what you want to hear from your manager. But a big part of the problem now is, obviously, last season, when it's a one bad game, it's easy to say that wasn't good enough in isolation. But now, when you're struggling week to week, match to match, and fans still expect that, and we've sort of seen him move past that now, and it's excuses, injuries, the Europa League. And the Europa League one, I cannot get my head around, because everyone was clear last season, we needed to be back in Europe. That was the way forward. And yet, Mascheri and Koeman in recent weeks have both weighed heavily in blaming the Europa League for where we are now. And it's like, well, you wanted this. You knew this was coming. You can't now turn around and say, well, actually, these extra games are why we struggled. But we were in a league of our own for that long towards the back end of last season. We knew we were finishing seventh. We knew we were going to have to start the season in July. They've had time to prepare. And I think now the sense is that whilst he was the right man, he needs to start showing responsibility. And he's not. He's making excuses. He's picking the same players every week in systems that don't work.
I think I was going to say Arsenal fans listening to that will be able to identify certainly with the way that the summer went and knowing what was on the horizon and not doing things quickly enough to sort those out. It was interesting. I saw him a couple of weeks ago where he talked about, well, you know, if the players aren't willing to put it in, then the manager has to start looking at himself and, you know, perhaps suggesting that his position was a bit tenuous. I think that might be self-defeating in a way, isn't it? If the players aren't already going to dig in for you, and then you as manager say, well, look, if they're not going to dig in, maybe I have to start thinking about, you know, my own position, it will make them less inclined to do that.
Yeah, I think the thing that really annoyed me at the time was after we drew with Athlon Limassol in the Europa League, and we did, as we seem to do in the easy games, we drew 2-2 in the last minute against 10 men. And afterwards he came out and basically said, well, you know, that's on the players. And as much as, you know, the final error, not defending the free kick, may have been on the players, it's quite clear to most fans that this poor start is on the manager. And to have him come out and say that was, I think that's the point where he maybe lost a lot of fans, because he sort of threw the players under the bus without actually, when he needed to sort of say, this is on me, we'll work through this together, I hold my hands up, it hasn't been good enough. And we've not seen any of that.
Arsenal come to town on Sunday with a really poor away record in the Premier League this season. They went to Liverpool, got beaten 4-0. The only point we've got on the road is a 0-0 draw at Chelsea, which was something we had to do, having lost the way that we did in Anfield, but we've lost at Stoke. We've lost at Watford just last weekend, a game that we had in our hands, quite similar to the Everton game last season where Arsenal took the lead and then let it slip late on, and that was a real turning point in our season. Well, what's your feeling on facing Arsenal at this moment in time? Is it, oh, well, this could be the game that could turn us around, or are you more worried that your own bad form might contribute to the result?
At this stage, I'd say it's more the latter.
Right.
I think Troy Deeney, with his comments after your game the other day, was sort of spot on. And as much as, you know, you don't want to be kicking Arsenal off the park, so to speak, but up and at them, especially when you're at home and Arsenal come to visit, has always seemed to be the way to go about things.
Yeah.
But even that approach at the minute seems beyond us, because there's just no energy in the team. It's slow. There's no legs. And I know we had success a few years ago where Martinez put Lukaku wide right, and because Monreal was like on another planet, I think, and he just sort of cut in behind him and used that space, and we won 3-0. And that was probably that was a great performance and all that, but there's none of that. And, you know, I think the key to beating Arsenal, especially away from home, is press them up the pitch, you know, isolate the defence and so on. And the way we're setting up now, it's just not possible.
Koeman's record against Wenger is pretty good, though, not just at Everton, but at previous clubs he's managed. He seems to have this little bit of an Indian sign over Arsene Wenger. And to me, I have to say, like, as an Arsenal fan, I mean, it's quite funny. You're sitting here despairing at your own team, and I'm sitting here despairing at my own team. And I think that's the way of the football fan, isn't it? We kind of focus on what's wrong with our own team and can't see any way out of it. But I have to say, it feels to me like this is the kind of game that could reignite Everton's season, simply because it would be very Arsenal for us to go there and do something similar to what we did at Watford, is that take the lead and then sit back and end up putting ourselves under pressure and allowing that, like you say, that momentum that a home team can build. Would it say something to you if the Everton side were able to get up and put in that kind of a performance, or would it just be a one-off?
Yeah, that's the problem. I think we'd have to see, because at the situation we're in now, doing it against Arsenal, but then, you know, we've got Chelsea away in the League Cup after that, and we haven't won there since 1994. Leicester away, Lyon away, it's daunting, and as hard as those games are, we've got to start winning them. I don't know, It would be good, but I think a lot depends on as well on how tonight goes against Leon, because I think especially if we don't see a reaction tonight, and if you can score first on Sunday, the crowd will go.
Right.
And you can understand it, you know, fans are losing patience with what they're seeing, and we saw it against Burnley. If you score first and there's no reaction from the players, the atmosphere will get toxic, and I think that'll the game might just totally slip away from us.
Mm. Yeah, well, we'll have to wait and see. You know, you should never underestimate Arsenal's ability to hand the opposition a lifeline, that shot of adrenaline that they need. But we'll have to wait and see. It sounds like two teams in a difficult place, and it'll be interesting to see which one can master the situation better than the other. I don't know if it's going to be a classic, but we'll have to wait and see. Luke, thanks very much indeed.
Oh, thank you.
Thanks to Luke. You can find him on Twitter if you like. He is at Luke O'Farrell. That's at Luke O'Farrell. And, well, that's what's going on at Everton. And that's what was going on at Everton before their 2-1 defeat to Lyon at Goodison Park last night. Ronald Koeman at the end of the game looked particularly unhappy. He looked bereft, as I was saying in the chat with Tim, berating the referees. That's never a good sign. He's on the pitch, they're paying him no attention, and I think he is a man under some serious pressure. Whether that's the kind of pressure that will see his players down tools on Sunday, or if they like him enough, respond and give Arsenal a real game, we'll have to wait and see. Let's hope it is the former rather than the latter. We have talked about that game with Tim, so there's no point going on with it. Thank you, as ever, for listening. Just to remind you that if you had the time to give us a review on iTunes, that would be greatly appreciated. A review or a rating, indeed. Just click on to iTunes. That would be fantastic. James and I will be here on Monday. We'll have an Arsecast extra for you, of course. We'll be looking back at what happens over the weekend, and hopefully it's only good things that happen to us, because believe it or not, that is what I prefer. That is what I like. I like it when Arsenal win. I like it when Arsenal are good. I like it when we play well. Despite what some people might have you believe, that is what I like best. So look, let's keep fingers crossed that they can do that. We'll catch you on Monday and, of course, on the next one. Until then, cheers. Thanks for listening. Bye-bye.
Hi, I'm Stan Kroenke, and ahead of next week's AGM, I just want to tell you all that I'm going to be there. I'm going to stand up, and I'm going to be counted. I'm going to talk to y'all. I'm going to tell you exactly what our vision is for this football club, how we're going to make it the powerhouse of Europe, how we're going to win the Premier League and the Champions League. I'm going to be up front. I'm going to be honest. I'm going to bare my soul to you guys. No longer will I be silent, Stan. You won't even be able to shut me up, I promise you, because... Josh, can I send it out there? Come on, Josh. I know you said I shouldn't, but this shit is gold, man. Come on, Josh. God damn it, you're such a spoiled, spoiled little asshole. Just like your mother. God damn it.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.